Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
She keeps lighting up the way, even on the darkest day. Dawn is breaking, all awaken from the night. From the shore into the waves, washing all the bitterness away, lifting darkness with your stillness and your grace. It's you I like, and you mean everything to me. It's you I like, 'cause you are light, and I see everything I need. It's alright, yeah. Shine bright, light up the skies above. Shine bright, do it with the ones you love. Shine bright, and never, ever, ever let it die. Shine bright, light up the stars above. Shine bright, and do it in the name of love. Shine bright, and I promise to never let it die. And if they ever make me choose, you know exactly what I'm gonna do. Second guessing, it's you I choose. Yeah, yeah, 'cause you are light, and I see everything I need. Yes, you are light. Yeah, yeah. Shine bright, light up the skies above. Shine bright, do it with.
Into the most powerful platform for truth anywhere on the face of God's green earth. You're tuned into the voice of an entire nation. Welcome to the Star and Crescent Report. As always, we open up in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who is none other than Master Farhan Muhammad, the Almighty, All-Wise, True and Living God, Allah, who has come to us this day and granted us a divine mercy and reminder in the personage of the last and most surely the greatest of the apostles, prophets, and messengers of God there ever is. We speak about none other than our leader, teacher, and guide for these final days of judgment, the most holy and humble, Elijah Muhammad. And we greet all of our listening and viewing audiences with the greetings of peace, love, and paradise in the original language of Arabic, which means peace be unto you. We say to you all in both their names of love, As-salamu alaykum. For those of you who may wish to participate in our discussion today, you're welcome to call in at 347-989-0855. That's 347-989-0855. Or you can hit us up with a message at Hiram1555@yahoo.com. That's Hiram1555@yahoo.com. As always, we'd like to thank you for giving us another hour of your day and another day of your time. We'd like to thank the thousands of you who listen live from around the globe and the thousands of you who will download us later from all of our affiliate sites, be it Hiram1555.tumblr.com, Twitter.com/Hiram1555, Facebook.com/Hiram1555, BlogTalkRadio.com/Hiram1555, and our main news blog, which is formerly TrumpetOfTruth.wordpress.com, and also formerly SalamJournal.com and SalamJournal.org, which is now the Hiram1555 blog at Hiram1555.com. Again, my beloved family, As-salamu alaykum, and welcome to another edition of the most powerful platform for truth anywhere on God's green earth. This is your platform for black education, liberation, and edification. This is the Star and Crescent Report, and our show today is titled The Economic House of Cards is Starting to Collapse, Part 4, Code Blue. Now, before we go into the show, I would like to say we are experiencing trouble, as always, during this show. I'm just so happy that I'm out of Blog Talk Radio jail. and I can say just for today, I believe. But anyway, we're going to do this show. Remember, this is a five-part series. It started out being a two-part, but we boosted it up to be a five-part. I'm also doing this on a cell phone because, again, ironically, during the show, the power went down, the phone lines went out. So we're doing this through a cell phone. So, brothers and sisters, if I'm here, you be here, and let's all get into this powerful show, okay, today. Now, again, the show is titled The Economic House of Cards is Starting to Collapse, Part 4. It's a code blue. Now, why did I say it's a code blue? Because in medical terms, according to the medical definition of the term code blue, it is an emergency situation announced in a hospital or institution in which a patient is in cardiopulmonary arrest, requiring a team of providers, sometimes called a cold team, to rush to the specific location and begin immediate resuscitative efforts. That means the patient is dead or nearly dead. This is America. This is America's authority. This is America's finances. This is American economy. This is American politics. This is international politics. This is the Western way of things. They are dying out. There's no doubt about it that they're in such a bad state. A couple of days ago, I was just listening to some old clips that I have downloaded to one of my laptops. And I was listening to some of the things that Gregory Manorino and others were saying, things that I had recorded at 2014, 15, 16, 17, and even up to a few months ago, 2018. It wasn't just Gregory Manorino, but there were so many of them, and they were so hell-bent on, they wanted some type of glimmer of hope. They just wanted something that they could rest their hat on and say, okay, maybe if this happens, then this is not the end of America. Maybe if this happens, then this is not the end of the Western world. And then as reality sets in, gloom and doom starts taking over, and you can hear the hurt, the fatalism in their voices as they describe the mathematical impossibility of America and the Western world escaping the economic tsunami that is going to wreak havoc across the world. I'm getting some kind of beeps. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if this is blog talk or whatever, but I'm still talking to you all because as far as I know, I'm still on the air live, okay? So we're gonna do everything we can. And if I get cut off, let me say this to all of you who are listening also and those who are just joining us. If in the middle of the show or during the show, and sometimes I am cut off or muted or anything like that, please hold on. It may take me a minute to recognize it, or it may take me a few minutes to get back online, but we're going to try to do this entire show because it is so important because of the time and what is going on behind the scenes geopolitically and what is going on economically, okay? All praise is due to Allah for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I want you to, before I even go any further, let me play one of the clips, okay, from a while ago. And these are short clips. I wasn't planning to play these on the show, but something just told me it just kept driving me towards playing these because we got so many updated clips that I want you to hear. But I want you to hear. Now, remember that this is a year ago, and believe me, I'm going to play some more clips from 5 years ago and 9 years ago, and it is about this dire situation that America was facing then. And I'm doing this for a reason because I want you to understand that the situation has only gotten progressively worse for America and for the Western world with the debt situation, the job situation, the political situation, the technological advancement of the East over the West, right? The manufacturing, everything has gotten progressively worse for the West, especially and specifically America. And when I play some of these clips, I want you to ponder over those things, okay? But right now I'm going to play you one or two clips from a year ago because I want you to pay close attention to what they're saying, okay? And then we're going to fast forward it. Remember, this wasn't in the plan, but I always go where Allah leads me to. Else I find myself just confused and dazed. But I want you to pay close attention to this, okay? So bear with me.
Get any more? It's very frightening. Very frightening.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about gold. Zero Hedge last week was reporting that that they dumped 4 billion in notional value on the gold market. And you know what I found weird about that? It only went down. It only closed down about 11:30 for the day. It's up for the week. What do you think about that kind of intervention and not getting a big result? It just seems to me like this stuff is wearing off, like it's not working anymore.
Well, you know what? We've seen this before. I talked about it on my video blog here, and how they do this is so again blatant. These entities, whoever they are dumping paper gold onto the market using market orders. Now, let me talk about what that is real quick. When an individual or an institution wants to either buy or something in the market, and you put in a market order, that means you're willing to pay anything for it if you're looking to buy or sell it for whatever you can get. I mean, it's like me taking my Mercedes, putting it outside and putting a sign that says, okay, I want to sell this and I'm willing to take whatever you want to give me. I don't care what it is. Just take this off my hands. So this is done to manipulate the markets. And we've seen it over and over and over again, and we're going to continue to see that. Again, the market is going to dictate fair value at one point. There's no doubt about it. But they are going, these central banks and these banks that are involved here, look this up. I'm urging people to look up the London Gold Fix. They are going to lose control at one point, just like the Fed is, and just like other world central banks are with regard to the markets that they're manipulating to.
By dumping this much gold onto the paper gold, I should say, by dumping this much gold onto the markets, is that a sign that they're losing? I mean, that gold should have been out $50. I mean, gold should have been out $100 if they dumped $4 billion. Nobody's got $4 billion of gold sitting around. This is, they just invented $4 billion of gold to sell, and they dumped it on the market. They only got it to go down 11 bucks.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a sign of this losing steam that people are calling BS on the BS, and they're just – it's all strong hands holding gold?
It very well may be, because I know that at one point the free market forces are going to win. I don't know when. I don't care when. I'm just trying to capitalize on this and let everyone understand what's going on so they can do the same thing. Absolutely, Greg. There is no doubt whatsoever. None. And
that's your read, too, though. I wanted to find out, is that your read, too? Because it seems to me, wow, Zero Hedge reports $4 billion dumped, and you get $11? I mean, if they're trying to drive the price down, that's not what they wanted. They didn't want $11 for a $4 billion plunge.
They're trying to scare people. That's all they're trying. They're trying to shake people out of it. Look, for anyone to believe, really, that the price of gold, the price action of gold right now is what the market is dictating, because it's not really the market, it's got to be insane. The real price of gold, in my view, today should be close to $8,000 an ounce. And silver should be probably $500 an ounce. So these are the real prices based on the ever-expanding debt. But again, they are so desperate. Again, they're fixing the price. They're rigging it. It's incredible. And then we're not done seeing. They're going to do everything and anything they can to keep this propped up until they're ready to kind of just, I guess, let this whole thing go. And that's when the middle class is going to receive a fleecing unlike anything they have ever witnessed, has ever been witnessed in world history, to the nth degree. And I think that's really the general setup here. I can't imagine this going another way. And it's just ugly, Greg. You know that.
Brothers and sisters, I've been talking to you. And I've been explaining things to you. I have been doing this. And Blog Talk Radio has been blocking me. They've been doing this. And I've given you deep explanations on the decline of the dollar. I've given you deep explanations on so many things. That it is amazing that, and Brother McCall, I see your call, brother. I see you. Thank you. I know they were knocking me off. I know they were blocking me, and I know they were cutting you off and all this stuff like this. I knew this is what they were doing, okay? So we still have an hour of the show to get to you, brothers and sisters, okay? I've been explaining this, and Blog Talk Radio kept muting my mic. I cannot do anything about it. I've been talking to you, but this is what we go through. Again, this is what we go through. I want to apologize for all of you who are listening, because this is so, and the time that I've been muted, I've been really teaching, thinking that we were unmuted. And my screen shows me unmuted, and then all of a sudden it pops up after saying I'm muted. Do you understand? This is what you have to go through to get this truth out. They don't do anybody else like this. I've been teaching you for 20-some minutes about the London and the Gold Stock Exchange, and they've been having my mic muted. That's amazing, isn't it? And this to show you that they don't want this show, this truth, to be taught to you. But we're going to go in and hide, and I'm frustrated at this moment. Because I've been really talking and teaching, but I've been teaching to the wind, been teaching in the air. And nobody has been able to hear this. And people have been, the calls have been dropped left and right. A strange thing. It's a very frustrating thing for these things to take place. But we have to go further. We have to go on. And this is how it is. But I told everybody from the jump, if they mute me, if they knock me off, please hang on. And this is what you see. This is how it happened. But the show is titled "The Economic House of Cards is Starting to Collapse," and it is a cold blue. So, brothers and sisters, I gotta admit that my spirit is kind of hurt at this moment, because I was really teaching, really teaching into the decline of the British pound and the decline of the dollar, and I'm thinking that everybody is getting it, right? I'm thinking that everybody is getting it, and to teach that hard and to go into definition and depth on this, and you not hear it, it like drains and saps some of your energy away from you. This is real, black man and black woman. But anyway, I digress from that. Let's continue to go forward. Thank those of you who are still holding on for holding on. I thank those of you who tried to tune in but got frustrated with Blog Talk Radio for listening. I thank you, but I'm hoping that you go back and listen again, okay? And this is what we have to deal with to get the show on. But let's go further, all right? So you heard we'll cap it off from Gregory Mannarino's talking, all right? And so Gregory Mannarino is telling you about the situation at hand. And he's talking about, he says something very, very significant that you should understand. In that clip that he played, that I played, he talked about the decline. He said, talked about the London Gold Exchange. And this is, again, why Muhammad talked in the fall of America about the decline of the American dollar. And he always prefaced the fall of America in that chapter with the fall of England. He says, when the world went off the gold and silver standard, the financial doom of England and America was sealed. That's what he said. He didn't say the financial doom of America and England. He said it in the other words. Why? Because the New York Gold Exchange and the New York Stock Exchange is tied directly to the London Gold Exchange, because the London Gold Exchange is the center of the exchanges globally. So when London gets a cold, America gets a flu, and vice versa economically. And this is why these two nations are so tied together economically. This is why these two nations are so tied together militarily and politically. Because if you shoot one of them, the other one feels the pain economically. You understand? I'm hoping that you're getting this, right? And he also talked about the criminality of this system, right? This is what it is. But I'm going to let you hear him talk a little bit more about this, okay? But most of you don't want to hear this. Most of you don't want to hear this truth. But you've got to hear this truth. I want you to pay close attention, and I'm going to be very mindful of the screens, okay? But I want to say that if they knock me off again for more than 2 minutes, brothers and sisters, we will reboot this show and do it on another day. Because they're continuing, even when they're allowing me to get back on, they're continuing to mute my mic. I guess they're going to another level now. The previous three shows must have really teased them off. But I want you to pay close attention and listen closely to what Mr. Mannarino is talking about the, how the people don't want to hear this truth. All right, we're going to play two clips from the past, and then we're going to bring it up to speed. All right, and after we bring it up to speed, we're going to address so many things. And I hope that from this point on that we do not get disconnected, we do not get muted, because it takes a lot out of you when you're teaching and it's just going to the wind. I want you to pay close attention to this. This is about a two-minute clip about how he talks about the people, okay?
Biblical, when this comes down.
And this bond market sell-off, people are saying, I want my money. These people aren't going to pay back the debt. Venezuela just defaulted. Maybe that's part of it. Puerto Rico's defaulted.
Pension plans, think about it.
They're just saying, I'm out. Give me my money. I'm selling now. They're early adapters. They're early adapters to getting out. You're thinking that if more people say, oh, this is never going to get paid back. What, we have a default in Venezuela? Who's next? I mean, that's the question, right? Who's going to say, we can't pay? Is that the next question?
We can't pay back our debt here. And like, all right, let's talk about Alan Greenspan. Remember Alan Greenspan saying, oh, we can pay back any debt? Oh, sure, we can. That means we're going to have to print all this cash out of thin air. And what do people think that means? If we were to print out $22 trillion, $100 trillion, if you want to include the unfunded liabilities, what does that mean for the dollar? That means your dollar isn't buying you anything. You might want to go try to buy a loaf of bread. It might be $400. I mean, it's an incredible situation. There's going to be a price to pay for this, Greg. You know this as well as everybody else. And everyone listening who has a couple of functioning brain cells, I believe, can put this together in their own head. It's not that hard. But again, people are not ready for this, Greg. They don't want to hear it. It's outside their comfort zone, outside their thought paradigm. And all I can say is the signs are everywhere. And, you know, talking about signs everywhere, what we talked a little bit about in the pre-interview here, they'll bring us to war. If they have to, they will do anything and everything to create reasons to borrow cash into existence, if that means another world war for which millions will die, they'll do that too. It doesn't matter to them. They will grease the wheels of this machine that they've created with our blood, with our guts. And we mean nothing to them. And unfortunately, people have no clue. They have no idea of what's really going on.
See, he says the signs are there. Now, he said this last year. He said, and these people will take you into a war. They will do anything, even a world war, to try to keep their rule. And Elijah Muhammad told you that. And I said, yeah, the wife, he was teaching you that. But you said this was racist. But you hear this Italian-American saying it just as simple. Talked about how criminal the system is and how they will try to perpetuate and maintain their rule over everybody, right? You just heard Gregory Manorino say it. Elijah Muhammad said, matter of fact, let's try to read it real quick, okay? He says, the present world of white people have had their time and have gone over their time to rule. Nevertheless, they still want to rule or to destroy the idea of someone else ruling, as shown by their preparations made for the total destruction of the human family. Elijah Muhammad said that. You just heard Gregory Manorino say it in a different form about how criminal and how psychotic these people are, and how the average person doesn't see all of the signs, and the signs are all around. Even within America, they're still talking about an economic recovery, and it's poverty everywhere. Matter of fact, and because the time is limited, let me play you a little clip on this. And these are the people who are suffering too.
Veterans are the favorite cause of pundits, politicians, and anyone else who wants to appear patriotic. Across America, there is no shortage of support our troops bumper stickers, flag waving, and praise for the military.
We remember all those who made the ultimate sacrifice for our nation.
Who gave their last breath.
Died in a distant land, fighting terror.
Gave everything for family, country, God, and freedom.
We owe you our respect.
Our veterans are a national treasure.
Their sacrifice will not be in vain.
But all that bombastic praise and expression of gratitude doesn't exactly translate to a good life. Studies show that veterans of the war on terror are among the least likely to be able to afford a home once they return to the United States. That's right. Those who've risked their lives in conflicts around the world are among those who struggle the most for basic needs like shelter.
With housing, obviously veterans are going to face, a whole host of related challenges.
Now, I stopped it there for a specific reason, because they hit a point, a real very, very poignant point that I need to make. They're talking about as the veterans return home, they will be the ones mostly suffering and not being able to get homes, right? So this means you will have an influx of unemployed, homeless people who have just come back from the war zone. Remember in Theology of Time, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I don't have the book on me at this moment, but you remember the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, this is why America is afraid to bring her soldiers home. Remember that? He said, because when she bring home, what would they have? This means that she would have unemployed soldiers who come from the war zone here without jobs. This is a nightmare for America. This is why she continues to play, well, we'll redeploy. We'll do this. How many tours of duty this and that person must have? And you go from Iraq to Afghanistan to this place to this place. She's playing musical chairs because she knows that Muhammad said this is the greatest headache that America will suffer. One of the greatest headaches, she said. Bringing the troops home without jobs, without home. And they'll be ready to start a war within America because that's what they've trained for. And they'll see, because their families will starve. Their family would be outdoors, and they would think about the sacrifices that they so-called made to maintain America, a war at home. Do you see how this, the signs of that, Gregory Manorino said, everything that Elijah Muhammad says, we can point to it in real time. There should be no more doubt as to the legitimacy of the messenger of God, because we're going to prove it. Now, homeless veterans, homeless people. They're counting the jobs numbers, but real jobs is John, what is his name from Seattle Stats, talks about unemployment being 16, 17, sometimes 20%. Now, remember, I played on one of these shows. I believe they said whatever the unemployment is for what they say is America, you do three or four times that for black America. So that means unemployment is up to 40, 50%, even up to 60% for black people. You understand? And you can't always, right now you can't get loans because they have all these hurdles to go through for most black people. And when you think you've cleared all these hurdles, they come up with something else. You continue to see them. See, this is the trick they did. And the Bible talks about how they would be built and married and given into sport and play. And you see, they'll have all these buildings, right? Nothing wrong with them. They'll let them go down or they'll demolish them, and then they'll go build something right in the same spot. This is to try to make you think that everything is still going straight. Now, remember, also on this show, I played a clip where they said that America's empty houses, the empty houses that she has within her own borders are enough homes to house everybody in the UK, everybody. So why does America have a homeless problem? Because she's greedy. She can't see herself allowing you to go into a home. She can't see herself allowing you to make a living if she can't profit. You understand? That is the game of the white man, especially the American white man. And this game is also what has helped to put her in so much debt. She was so greedy for profit and so greedy for expansion in her economy that she went and struck a deal with the Chinese, thinking that the Chinese were 50 and 60 years behind in technological savvy, economic savvy, and political savvy. War criminal Henry Kissinger went over there and struck a deal with the Chinese, the technological base over there, the manufacturing base over there. And the Chinese would recycle dollars in America to help keep the economy pumping, and that would be dollars for the military-industrial complex. And this produced debt on top of debt, especially after America unhinged herself from the gold and silver standard. That means her currency was backed by nothing but currency. You understand? This is what Elijah Muhammad was saying on page 87 of the decline of the dollar, when he talked about it wasn't backed by anything. No sound value. It wasn't backed by nothing but currency. Let's go. Let me see. Fall of America, 87. He says, the pound has lost 50% of its value. America's dollar has lost everything now as power backing for a currency, which was once backed by gold for every $5 note and up. All of her currency was backed by silver from a $1 note up. But today, the currency of America is not backed by any sound value, silver, or gold. The note today is something that the government declares that they will give you the value in return, but does not name what that value is. He says, but they definitely are not bagging their currency with silver or gold. Now, Elijah Muhammad was giving you these tidbits for free in the 70s, but you're paying John Williams or Shadow Stats and all these other people for something that he was giving you to gain free. And he goes and says, but they definitely are not bagging their currency with silver or gold. This is the number one fall. And it is very clear that the loss of the power of the American dollar means the loss of the financial power of America. You understand? So the unhinging of the dollar to the gold and silver standard, the American recycling of the petrodollar, and then also opening up her economic base to China because she thought that she can go over there and they would produce toys. Well, in America, they was producing, and you would have to pay the producer $5 a toy, and then they would have to take the toy in the store and sell it for $80 or $90. Well, we can go in China, and we can get 100 toys for $2, and we can still sell it at that rate. This is what they were saying. This is the greed. But this greed produced debt, which is a economic noose around the neck of the American empire, and this is why her debt has continued to balloon. And her interest payments are nearing $1 trillion alone. You understand? As a matter of fact, if you don't understand, I want you to listen to Jim Rogers as he tells you more. This is 3 minutes and 38 seconds. Listen closely to what he has to say. All right.
It's not very often that I meet somebody who sees the world in similar fashion as I do. And in this case, it's good to be, if I'm crazy, it's good to be surrounded by a guy who's crazier than I am. Jim Rogers, he is a legendary investor and author of A Gift to My Children, A Father's Lessons for Life and Investing. Have you always, I mean, you're legendary to have a sit down with you and to be, I mean, unless you're Neil Cavuto, you don't get a chance to sit down with you very often. How long have you been deemed nuts?
Probably for about most of my life, I would suspect, looking back on it, even when I was in high school. I grew up in a very small town in Alabama. Even then, they thought there was something wrong with me.
Right.
And they were probably right.
Right, yeah. Give me a thumbnail sketch of what you see coming.
Well, the United States is now the largest debtor nation in the history of the world, Glenn, and it's getting worse. It's not getting better. You would think that those clowns in Washington would read one history book and see what happens when countries get into this kind of situation. Nobody ever has gotten out of this kind of situation without a crisis or a semi-crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the crisis or the semi-crisis is coming sooner rather than later. We're the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. In the history of the world.
Are they inflating our money intentionally is the only way to get out of this debt?
Of course. That's what they hope to do, is they will cause inflation. I don't know if they're smart enough to plan this out, but the way it's working, they're going to inflate the currency, cause inflation, currency will come worth less and less, and we'll pay it off in worthless money.
I talk to people all the time who are at your level, and they say, Glenn, no, you know, it's going to be a controlled inflation. And I don't know how you control that. There's no way to control that.
Nobody has ever been able to control inflation. Once inflation starts, then you try to put it down. It gets harder and harder. The longer you wait, the worse it gets.
Right.
Just read some history books.
Because
people think I'm nuts, too. I say, just look it up.
I know.
I'm not smart. I just looked it up.
Right.
You look it up, too.
It's really simple. I mean, one of the first things, when they started TARP, a friend of mine who is very well aware of all the situations, just said this to me: read all you can about Weimar. And I have. And there came a point where the politicians were, well, where they are now, where they said, they looked at each other and said, okay, if we stop all this stimulus, then we go into a Great Depression, and then the people are going to rise up, and there'll be riots in the streets. And if we don't, there'll be hyperinflation. And they said, yeah, but that's not necessarily guaranteed. That gives us more time. All they're doing is, and they could be of the best intent. I'm not claiming that they are, but they could have the best intent. And they're doing just, let's just have more time to figure something else out.
I don't think any politician has ever brought disaster on knowingly and willingly. It just gets out of control. But Glenn, most politicians are not that smart. That's why they become politicians. The studies show, you know, that the people in America who become the best politicians are the people who excelled at playground. They didn't excel at anything else. Most of them have never had jobs. They don't know how the world works. And it's frightening. It's frightening.
Okay.
So you heard that. He brought up references to Weimar, or some people say Weimar, meaning Germany, in the early turn of the century, of the 20th century, when it went into hyperinflation and the economy it collapsed. This is what he's talking about, is a reflection, what he's thinking of when it comes to America. That's just a small tidbit of what America's expecting. And I'm playing this, and this clip is from Jim Rogers and Glenn Beck of seven years ago. Now I want you to hear this clip here. This is from 5 years ago. Now remember, as you listen to these things, remember what they're saying, and remember that all of the economic barometers have deteriorated to such a state that they have never been like that in the history of the world. Remember this now. So how in the world, if your debt has exploded, the on-book debt, the off-book debt, right, you continue to use budget deficits, not surpluses, all right, your manufacturing is gone, and your trade is always in the negative and never in the positive. How in the world can you say that economic barometers are getting better? How can you say that you're in a economic recovery? It doesn't make sense. The devil is a liar. He's never going to tell you the true state of his economy until you see it collapsing on you and your family. This is real. Now, we're going to push it up to 5 years, 5 years ago, all right? And as you listen to this, this is only a minute, the theme continues to be told by Jim Rogers that America is not only in debt, she's not only in a huge amount of debt. She is the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. What is he saying to you? That if you take the historical records and you put all of the nations that have ever existed together, all of their debts together to the debt that America is under today. She is the greatest and the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. How in the hell can you be prosperous? How in the hell can a republic or civilization be maintained under the expansion of debt? That's something to think on as you listen to him in this minute and 20-second clip.
The United States is now the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. Even the Pentagon says that our debt is now a security threat because we can't afford it anymore. We have overreached militarily, economically, financially, geopolitically.
I'm going to play that again. The first part you need to pay close attention to. He says even the Pentagon is stating that the debt has become a national security threat. Now, that's something, isn't it? I want you to pay close attention to that again.
The United States is now the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. Even the Pentagon says that our debt is now a security threat because we can't afford it anymore. We have overreached militarily, economically, financially, geopolitically around the world. In 1918, at the end of the First World War, the UK was the richest, most powerful country in the world. It was no number two in 1918. If you looked at a map of the world, it was all red because the British Empire was everywhere. But within one generation, the Great Britain was a financial chaos, and within three generations, it was bankrupt. It's happened to everybody. Everybody, every major power has overextended. Power corrupts. I'm not the first person to figure that out. But for whatever reason, it's always happened. It's happening to us, too. I don't particularly like saying this. I happen to be an American citizen, voter, taxpayer. But it's in the process of happening already, where this dollar is losing its status as the world's reserve currency. Our enemies certainly have stopped using the dollar. But many of our friends are pulling away from the dollar, too. We have soldiers stationed in over 100 countries around the world. Nothing wrong with the soldiers, but the presence is making enemies in much of the world.
See, not only is the economy overstretched, the military is overstretched, and America continues to alienate and make enemies by her military presence in other lands and her threats to other nations, and also her economic sanctions on these nations. And this is also causing the nations to shun the dollar. So she's shooting herself in the face because she sees a net flying around. She's not using common sense. This is when God has you in derision. You become a delusional power, hell-bent on trying to maintain what you used to have and the power that you used to be in a world that has so much changed. It has changed so dramatically that if you would come out of your stupor, you would understand that you are no longer the world's global superpower. It is amazing. I want you to listen. I'm playing these clips for a specific reason, and I know that the time is running out, and I know I have things to do, and I know you have things to do, so I'm going to try to get as many clips as I. But remember, what we don't get finished here, we will do a part five, and we might have to extend it to a part six because they kind of blunted this show when concerning what we were trying to talk about, okay? And if you get a chance to go back and listen to this show also. But I'm going to play something. I'm trying to get these clips into you. I want you to listen to this guy. I played this on a show. As a matter of fact, I played it on one of my shows when this clip was actually new. But I went back and I cut the clip in half, maybe in thirds, and the third because it was like 15 minutes. So I did like a 5-minute and 6-second clip. And this was like 5 or 7 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. And this professor, I think it was, I forget what, Stanford or something like that, this professor who does numbers, right? He was talking about America's budget, her debt. And at the time, he wasn't talking about anything but a particular debt of America, right? This was when Greece, everybody was talking about Greece was this and Greece. And he said, no, America's in worse shape than Greece. And he comes to a conclusion that America is at least $222 trillion in debt. Now, stop right there. If that was the case 5 to 7 years ago, then how in the hell can America be $21 trillion or $22 trillion in debt today? Huh? I'm bringing these things up to ask you, to pose questions, to make you think. If they say that America's debt is $22 trillion and this is the point of no return, well, what about all the economists and mathematicians who had big numbers and came up with something greater in proportions 5 and 7 years ago? If $22 trillion is the tipping point, then we can say the entire truck has tipped over and go ahead and belly up, right? Is that not right? Pay close attention to these things because this man, this devil is a liar and he's going to make you believe that the sky is orange even if it was dark outside. You got to use your noggin. Use that 7.5 ounces of gray matter. Start making them atoms click, okay? And I want you to listen to this. This is 5 minutes. We might not play the whole thing and we may play the whole thing, but this is the professor, and at this time he was talking about $222 trillion or $230-some trillion in debt. Pay close attention. Here we go. Right here.
Lawrence Kotlikoff, economics professor at Boston University. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
It's great to be with you and great to be in Russia.
So you're the one who states that America is broke and is even in a worse state than Greece and Ireland. How so? What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, we economists look at all the bills the government has to pay. And in the U.S. case, we have enormous bills that have been kept off the books that are not official debts, but they're very real. For example, paying me my Social Security benefits, my old age pension, that's a real obligation. It's not part of official government debt, but it's, you know, very important because there are 78 million baby boomers who are going to get these Social Security payments and, in addition, medical payments from the government. If you look at all those payments, they're about $3 trillion a year. So we have these huge bills. Nobody has thought about paying for them. And Congress and the presidents over the years have just focused on official debt and basically have not told the public about these big bills.
He said the amount of the fiscal gap in the United States is, in your estimation, $222 trillion. Is this right?
$222 trillion.
This is like an astonishing number. It's like 3 times the world GDP. This is more than what the world makes.
20 times higher than the official debt in the hands of the public, which is $11 trillion. So if you add all these spending obligations into the distant future and you compare them with all the taxes and you include in the spending all the interest payments and principal payments on the debt, on the official debt, you have $222 trillion in present value. Now, this is 12% of GDP on an ongoing basis. In other words, we need to get 12% more of GDP either in tax increases or spending cuts in order to have the fiscal gap be zero. We're doing far too little too late. It's like operating on a person with cancer and you say, well, there's a big tumor here. We're just gonna take a little bit out today and we'll come back in 5 years and we'll take out some more. But maybe in 5 years the patient is dead because the tumor got bigger. So this is why we are in worse shape than Greece. And Greece is about 10% of GDP they need on an ongoing basis. We need 12%. Italy, it's about 5%. Germany, it's about 5%. So when you look at it from this perspective, it's a whole different story than when you look just at the official debt. Because these governments are making choices, word choices, about what to call official obligations and what to call unofficial.
So are they intentionally hiding the
They're
enormity
intentionally
of the problem?
Hiding this. They've been spending, in our country, six decades running a massive Ponzi scheme, taking from young people, giving to old people, and then telling the young people, don't worry, you'll get yours when you're old, promising pensions, promising health care benefits. And, you know, this is happening in all countries. Even Russia has a pension system, but it doesn't seem to be in as bad a shape as ours in terms of paying for its benefits in the future.
But, I mean, this number, $222 trillion, I mean, what exactly is this money? Where is this money going? Who is spending it? I mean, certainly not the average American. What is it, like the 1% of the super rich, the military needs? Where is it going?
Where is all the spending? Well, you have, again, a very big, you've got a lot of old people now. They're getting very high benefits, about $30,000 per person. It's scheduled to go up to about $40,000 when I retire, which will be about 15 years. So you can see that we're just very generous to the old people in our country.
What do you suggest, like cut spending, raise taxes? That would be suicidal to any American president.
Well, we have to be adults. If we're running the country, we have to act like adults, because our main responsibility as adults is to make sure our kids have a good future. So we have to reduce the growth rate of the benefits to the elderly. And that requires cutting being much more careful about how much we spend on health care, because it's been the health care benefits have been growing at twice the growth rate of per capita GDP.
We heard that. At the time, he said that the official debt, the citizen debt was $11 trillion, and so the real number was over 20 times that, which brought it up to $222 trillion. Now you have to multiply that by two, because the debt stands at, the official debt stands at $22 trillion. That's double, right? The $11 trillion. So that means that according to his meager calculation, the U.S. debt stands, and this is not talking about all that unfunded, all of these hidden debts of the derivative market. I'm just talking about these debts. It stands at 400, right? And what? If it was 222, that means it's 444 trillion at least, right? Is that not right? If the debt has doubled, then it is at 444 trillion. Dollars, at least. Is that not right? Now, that means that the Bible was correct when it says that in the day of America's downfall, none would come to her aid. Why? Even those who may sympathize with America, even if you put all the nations together and they put all of their GDPs together, some numbers say 47 trillion, some numbers say 65 trillion. Even if you put them all together and you multiply them two, three, four times over, they still will not have enough economic get-up to extricate America and the West out of the debt trap that they have fallen headlong into. I want you to understand that. The economic house of cards is starting to collapse. It's the cold blue. Now you see why we call it cold blue. So he says something. He says that they're not telling you the truth. They won't tell you the truth. This is what he said. They won't tell you the truth. Elijah Muhammad says, he tells us why. He says, to know the truth of the presence of the God of truth, and that presence is the salvation of the lost and found people of America, is to know your life and its happiness. The truth is in favor of you and me. So this is why they don't tell you that their economy is collapsing. This is why they don't tell you that the debt situation is they cannot extricate themselves from. This is why they don't tell you that the situation deteriorates by the second, by the minute, by the hour, by the day, because the truth is in your favor. And Muhammad goes and says on another page, he says, We should know the truth of the seriousness of the time that we are now living in. The truth will save our lives if we believe it. So I'm telling you this truth, and this truth will save your life if you believe it. He says, America is at war with the darker people. Yes, she is. He's not just talking about on the battlefield. He's talking about economically and politically, mentally and spiritually, emotionally. He's trying to fight on every level to keep you a subject to his empire and his way of thinking. So Muhammad says, America is at war with the darker people, the brown, yellow, and every race, regardless of color today. But she refuses to tell you the truth of this war that is now taking many lives. She won't tell you that she's going over in Asia to try to start trouble with China because she sees China usurping her authority in the Middle East. She won't tell you that. She gives you some, we are doing freedom of navigation. We are trying to protect the sea lanes. Nobody threatened the sea lanes. She always gives some type of justification for her madness. Muhammad says that she's at war with you, right? She gives you this justification. She knows her economy is in decline. So she's trying to hold the South China Sea hostage by military force. That's what she's trying to do. And now she's mad that one of her allies told her, hey, man, you done lost this. You lost this battle. You lost this battle in the South China Sea. This is an article, and hopefully we'll get more time to talk on this. I really wanted to get to that Chinese part and American part in the South China Sea. I really wanted to get to that, but I'm sure we won't get to that today. But listen to this, and I just want you to pay close attention. This is the headline. That's reality. Duterte tells U.S. the South China Sea is now in Beijing hands. Now, this is an American, so-called American ally of the Philippines. Listen to this. Beijing currently controls the vast majority of islands, reefs, and shoals in the South China Sea, which are also claimed by a number of other nations in the region, including the Philippines, Vietnam, Cambodia, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Brunei. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has warned Washington against bickering with Beijing over the South China Sea, which he conceded is already possessed by China. See, this is what you don't get. Standing these things. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that Asian man, that yellow man of Asia was made to push America out of there. And America is using all of her resources to try to maintain her hegemony over there. And it is to no avail. All of this tied economically. We're going to get back to that in just a minute, but I just want you to listen to this. I'm going to read this to you because we may not get a chance to cover this. He goes further and says, China is already in possession of the South China Sea. It's now in their hands. So why do you have to create friction? See, now the nations are telling the world that it's America that's causing the problem, not China. He says, so why do you have to create friction that will prompt a response from China? That's a reality. And America and everybody should realize that China is there, Duterte told journalists on the sidelines of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. That's the Asian, A-S-E-A-N, the acronym for that. What they met in the summit in Singapore. I'm just saying that to you. Let me read a little bit more to you because there's something in this article I want you to pay close attention to. Remember, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that it is the Asiatic nations who are going to lay America low. They're uniting all over Asia to lay this one low. Right? I want you to listen to this. He also suggests that the South China Sea related conflicts could best be settled by means of direct talks between China and the Asian countries. Remember, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that the countries over there are starting to say Asia is for Asiatics, and they're going to push America out of there. They want to solve their problems through their own means. Muhammad says that in the Theology of Time. This is what Duterte said. He also suggests that the South China Sea-related conflicts could best be settled by means of direct talks between China and the Asian countries. Such negotiations should be held, listen to this, without the U.S. and its allies, with fuel tensions by conducting freedom of navigation exercises, according to Duterte. Everything's been excellent between China and the rest of Asia, except for the fact that there's friction between the Western nations and China, he pointed out. See, I'm just telling you, do you see Elijah Muhammad's words coming to life? He goes further and says, his remarks came after leaders of the Asian countries adopted a binding code of conduct on the South China Sea in a move that was earlier initiated by Washington. Although the U.S. has repeatedly voiced concern over Beijing increasing its clout in the South China Sea, it's mostly limited its reactions to verbal reproach. Now, you see a host of things that Elijah Muhammad had warned you about, right? That the Asian nations would get together and they would sort out their own differences and they're going to push America out of there. They don't want America or her allies over there, according to Duterte, the president of the Philippines. He says, you're the one starting this trouble over here, not China. Did Elijah Muhammad tell you that was going to happen? I'm just asking, for those of you who listen, did Elijah Muhammad tell you those things? Huh? That's what I'm saying. I'm just asking. If you don't understand the truth, just read, study, pay close attention. Because we have proof. I'm saying America is doing these things because she is in such a fiscal conundrum. She's in such a precarious and disastrous situation that she knows that she can't get out. But she's going to use everything in her power to try to bully the nations and cower the nations. But her economic and her political situation is in such a condition that not even Jesus can save her. For all you Christians, don't get mad at your brother. We love Jesus. As a matter of fact, we follow the Jesus of Nazareth, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we bear witness to the Jesus Christ, who is our Lord, our Savior, Master Farad Muhammad. I want you to pay close attention to this. This is a long clip. I'm not going to play the whole thing. I just wanted to get to a certain part there. But this was done 7 years ago, okay? 7 years ago. And this is by F. William Engdahl, and he was giving an interview. And as he talked about the decline of the U.S. and the collapse of our economic and military and political clout, he retorted in the interview that not even Jesus could reverse the decline of the U.S. That's something that you this is a Christian who is telling you that Jesus is limited in heaven, America, because divine prophecy has already been pointed at America to bring the law. I want you to pay close attention to this. Remember, if he's saying that seven years ago, what do you think about the situation facing America today? Think on that while you listen to this. Here we go. Right here.
Joining us today is best-selling author and economist William Engdahl. He's been writing on issues of energy, politics, and economics for more than 30 years. Thank you for joining us today. Recently, we've seen several American banks beat forecasts and record an increase in profit. So is the worst now over for the world's economy?
This is by no means a sign of the end of the crisis. I estimate that we're perhaps 40% into the losses alone in the U.S. real estate sector. And these banks are, when we talk about the banks, we're talking really about at most 7 or 8 huge institutions that are at the center of this crisis and not tens of thousands of smaller banks in the U.S.
So in your opinion, do you think it's too soon to be optimistic?
It's absolutely too soon to be optimistic in the U.S. The U.S. is the heart of a global problem, the core of the problem. And U.S. financial and banking deregulation since the end of the 1990s is the proximate cause of the problem. And that is a process now that is going to put the U.S. into what I call 10 years of hell. It's going to be worse in some respects than the Great Depression of the 1930s for most Americans. And everything that the current administration and the previous administration have done about the problem is merely going to make it worse for the actual economy.
So now let's shift to Eastern Europe. Now, you've written at great length about the drama that's unfolding there. So could you perhaps paint us a picture about the situation there at the moment and which countries are most affected?
The problem in Eastern Europe is a derivative problem of the problem of cheap credit coming out of Wall Street over the last 7 years. And as the Fed lowered its interest rates after 2002, partly to create this real estate bubble and to feed the Wall Street bank's securitization process. The interest rates worldwide came down, the European interest rates and so forth. So banks in Europe were able to borrow money very cheaply and lend it out to Eastern European countries that were in the European Union, like Poland or Hungary or the Czech Republic. I don't see it as the same kind of crisis as the derivatives-driven crisis in the U.S. banks, because there is a real housing deficit after 50 years or so of the controlled economy, command economy, under the Warsaw Pact Soviet Union era. And people do have jobs. This isn't derivative speculation off the books. This is simply normal banking loans. And what the EU governments have done in one form or another is to step in with IMF funds. I'm not a fan of the IMF in any way, but the purpose of the funds was to stabilize the currency so that it doesn't become a speculative target and make the crisis worse. I think for the moment it's quote-unquote under control. It doesn't have the leverage potential that the American crisis has.
And Russia is currently in a similar situation, with rumors that many banks will soon go bust if more negotiation doesn't happen with the West sometime soon. Mm. So what do you think is the best option available to Russia?
Russia has to, and this is, I think, one thing that the current government and when Vladimir Putin was president, I think he very much tried to do, is to bring the crucial elements of a sovereign nation back under state control. That doesn't say going back to the era of central planning communism, but certainly to control your currency, to control your credit system. These are things that any sovereign nation should rightly have. And in terms of the banking crisis, perhaps there are some banks that would do better if they were nationalized. If the losses are too great, at least nationalized so that they could be then cleaned up from the toxic waste and the bad investments, and that the real economy comes out of this as the healthy factor and not pure financial speculation for the good of a few oligarchs at the expense of the Russian economy and the Russian people.
So how long do you think it's going to take before we see the end of this recession?
The point is, we're at an epochal change. This is something that happens perhaps every 400 or 500 years. This isn't a once-in-a-decade recession that we're living through. And I call it in my new book, which was just released in German, the decline of the American century. This is a terminal decline, as you had with the British Empire after World War I. And it wouldn't matter if Jesus Christ were the president of the United States today. There would be nothing he could do to reverse that decline process. You would almost have to
He's in the matter if Jesus Christ were president. America is in such a position now, nothing can get her out of this. She knows it. He said that 5 or 7 years ago, right? And we're looking at, he said, we're at an apocal moment. He didn't say apocalypse, he said apocal moment. And according to the dictionary, the meaning of apocal means relating to or denoting an apex of something. So we're at the apex of this collapse. There's no getting around this. America's in trouble. Brother Rashid, hold on. I'm going to try to extend this show a few more minutes. I know we got 12 minutes, but I want to get these clips down, okay? These last, and they're short clips. One is 3 minutes, one is 2 minutes, one is 2 minutes, one is 2 minutes, and I got some other stuff, but I just want to get to something. I'll bring you in, Rashid. Keep your hand up, okay? But I'm not going to go through all the clips. I just want to play those few clips that I told you because it's in the line of what we're talking about. America sees China as her greatest threat because China holds the largest amount of American debt. And she knows that to lose the South China Sea or to lose her position in Asia, when the largest economic trading bloc in the world is not the EU, is not the U.S. and Canada, it's the Asian nations, ASEAN, that organization plus China. That's the largest economic bloc on earth. And to lose a footing there, especially when you're drowning in debt, is to dig your own grave, jump in a hole and tell the people to get the bulldozer and cover you up. That's what it really is. This is why she's so adamant about picking a fight with China in the South China Sea. The nations know that. Matter of fact, I want you to listen to something. This arrogance, man, I just want you to listen to this. Listen to this. The economics dictate the military. And as the economics decline, that global juggernaut weakens, and she becomes more desperate. This is what Pompeo has to say, or what America has to say, and talking about China's militarizing the South China Sea. I want you to pay close attention to this, okay? Here we go.
And the U.S. Secretary of State has called on China to halt what he called the militarization of the South China Sea.
That we have continued concern about China's activities in militarization in the South China Sea. We press China to live up to its past commitments in this area. Regarding our strong ties with the Democratic Tehran, I reiterate that the U.S. policy has not changed, and that we are concerned about China's increasing efforts to coerce others constraining Taiwan's international space. And finally, I state that the United States...
The trade dispute between Washington and Beijing began earlier this year when the U.S. increased tariffs on Chinese imports. The two countries introduced a series of tit-for-tat measures, raising serious concerns over the stability of the global community. China has been actively seeking to bypass the U.S. dollar by increasing the use of its currency in mutual trade settlements. Now, POCO commentator Edward Corrigan has told Press TV that the U.S. military base is all over the world and that it cannot ask any country to halt its militarization.
The United States has military bases in over 100 countries, you know, surrounding Iran, all through the Gulf, through Africa. They're increasing their military presence in Africa. And like you say, they have a major fleet presence in the South China Sea in that area. Plus, they've got bases in Okinawa and Japan and you name it. It's hard to find a country that they don't have a base in. Even in Central Asia, they've got military bases and are doing a lot of things that are mischievous, right literally in Russia's and China's backyard. A number of years ago, Russia, China, and other East Asian countries formed what's called the Shanghai Agreement, where they have come together for economic reasons, but also for military reasons, and it's a defensive response to American, you know, incursions into the area. So it is bizarre that the United States would do that.
See, this is what America does. As she's weakening economically, she blames everybody else for her. Like when she invested, and they have it on tape, billions of dollars to overthrow the Ukrainian government and put in people that they can control. They start saying that Russia was invading Ukraine. And now come to find out that NATO has set up camps there and training centers there. This is what she did. All in Africa, and she's doing in Asia, and China's threatening the South China Sea military deployment. Now, it didn't say the Gulf of Mexico, right? It didn't say off the coast of South Carolina or California. It said in the South China Sea. But let me refresh your memories of who is the one that's militarizing it. See, because the message say you got to expose the devil and his lies. So the world can see him as he is. So they're claiming that China is doing this year, right? But let's go back in time and listen a couple of years ago of what their admirals and the defense secretary has to say something about this. First, let's listen to the defense secretary. This is about a minute and 42 seconds. Pay close attention.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta said on Saturday that the U.S. will move the majority of its warships to the Asia-Pacific region in the coming years. Panetta made the comments during a security summit in Singapore. He was careful to stress that the move shouldn't be viewed as confrontational.
Some view the increased emphasis by the United States on the Asia-Pacific region
as some kind of challenge to China. I reject that view entirely. Our effort to renew and intensify our involvement in Asia is fully compatible with the development and growth of China.
Currently, the U.S. has about 50% of its warships assigned to Asia, but that number will rise to 60% by the year 2020. And while the U.S. doesn't want to appear combative with its increased presence in the region, U.S. Senator John McCain, who's traveling with Panetta, said China should offer the same courtesy.
I don't view that China's military buildup necessarily is directed at the United States of America. But I do worry when we don't know exactly how much money is spent, what it's on, and we would also like to hear what their doctrine will be.
Panetta and the U.S. delegation are in the region for the next week and plan to visit Vietnam and India during their trip. Julie Noce, Reuters.
But they say their military buildup, which they announced years prior, is not directed at China. They said it's to engage, deeper engagement in the region, right? Don't you do that by ambassadors? Don't you do that by businessmen? Don't you do that by trade? Don't you do that by exchanges? You don't do that necessarily by military deployments. When you deploy especially 60% of your naval forces to a region, that is a sign of war. Is that not right? But that's not it. I just want you to listen. See, because I want to point out this stuff. This is how desperate she is. She always does things and imposes it upon other people. Assad is killing his people while she's bombing the hell out of them people illegally over in Syria. This is what the devil does. She always becomes the victim, and the victim becomes the aggressor. And this is why God is putting an end to it by breaking her power to rule. What did Elijah Muhammad say would happen to America in the West? He goes to work to break their power by breaking their trade. Is that not right? He means destroying their economic prowess. This is what Elijah Muhammad was saying. But listen to what the other person says about America's rebalance to Asia.
One of the most senior officers in the U.S. Navy was here in Singapore this week talking to counterparts about security in the region. Four-star Admiral Harry Harris also happens to be the highest-ranking Asian-American to ever serve in the U.S. Navy. Well, I caught up with him on board one of the most advanced missile destroyers in the U.S. fleet and asked him about the American strategic rebalancing toward Asia.
We're serious about the rebalance. The rebalance is real. It's not just a bunch of words, and it's real, and it manifests itself through the number of ships we have out here, the number of ships we're going to have out here, the types of ships and airplanes. And in fact, everything new that the Navy has, we're putting it in the Pacific. Today, about half of the Navy is in the Pacific, as you'd expect, Pacific Fleet and the East Coast and all that. But by 2020, we'll have about 60% of our Navy will be in the Pacific.
How much is the rising U.S. military presence in this region acting as a counter to China's rising military might?
The rebalance is not about China. You know, the rebalance is about American national interests in the region and our desire for stability and security in the region, which helps our prosperity and the prosperity of the whole region. It has a global impact. So the rebalance is not about China per se. But I am troubled about some aspects of China's growth because I don't understand it. I don't think they're as transparent as they could be. But we don't view China as in a negative way or in a threatening way. Actually, we welcome their rise as a natural military power.
Now, you're just 3 months into the job. Tell us, what is your most pressing concern? What's at the top of your list?
The most pressing thing I have to do is to be ready to fight tonight. I have to have military naval forces that are ready and capable of responding to any crisis, any threat to our national interests tonight. And I take that very seriously.
U.S. Admiral Harry Harris.
So he said they don't view China as a threat, right? And then he goes, it's not about China. Then he just tells you, well, we want to put all of our little stuff over there. We already got 50%, but we're going to put another 10%, and all of it is going to be our newest. What, and at the break of anything, we're going to just be ready for war. This is what he trouble and stuff else. This is what he said. They don't view China as a threat. But according to Mike Pompeo, who is the Secretary of the United States, right, on September the 20th, 2018, he says China, not Russia, is the greatest threat to America's position globally. This is what he stated, and it was backed by the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the War Secretary. But they don't view China as a threat. You see why this economic house is starting to collapse? Nobody believes it anymore. See, when the magician's tricks are revealed, all of the awe and allure about the magician, the mystique about the magician, disappears with it. And so the people are looking behind the cape. They're looking up the sleeve of that great magician or deceiver, America. And they're starting to get fed up with the tired old tricks. Let me go to the phone line because I extended this specifically for Brother Rashid. I'm going to bring you in, Brother Rashid. I say unto you, As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, brother. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, brother. We hear you very well. Go ahead.
One would swear that Elijah Muhammad had a crystal ball.
He could
literally see everything, and the crystal ball was what the black man failed to realize, but he was actually the last messenger of the real God, not no fruit floating up in space somewhere. The real living God.
Yeah.
This is how he could tell you all of these things. And the, from what the messengers say, they can, the scientists of Islam can see what's going to happen on our planet 100 years, 1,000 years in the future. So it's very easy
That's right.
to see what's coming the next week, you know, when most people can't see what's going to happen 10 minutes from now. They know exactly what's going to happen. Now, the China seat, the man says China going to whip him in this one. It's only a Chinese interview with a woman. The man said that China will defeat America in this great war. And that is the war he wants to say Russia, the one in Europe. He didn't say the one in the Middle East. He said the one in China to stay out of. He said they're going to send men and women of 5,000 and 10,000 come back in the 5 and 10. You go and get into that war in Asia, you got a chance of zero of coming out.
That's right.
China is the one that is like you said, was tasked to bring him down. And once, like I keep telling everybody, the war of Armageddon, why would there have to be a war of Armageddon? It is to break the military of the empire. Babylon had a great military advantage over everyone else. And the war of Armageddon is to curtail him back away from around what the menu said on People's Independent Baptist Church. He just said the Savior told him he was going to put America at war, bring every last show of America, and burn them in a lake of fire. There's no negotiation. You can't get up together with the Lord of the world and negotiate a plea bargain and kick it down to the third misdemeanor. No. And since Elijah Muhammad is gone, you can't even talk to him no more.
That's right.
There's only one thing: we're going to kill you, and that's it. So naturally, he's going to do everything. He can't be the Lord of the world. Tell me how many stars the white man have brought in. Not a one. So he has no, he can't defeat him. He can't outthink him. He don't know the future. So he said the only choice thing he's got is to try to beat Allah through his people. Deceive the Negro into thinking that he's a part of America now, and we're going to, now that he done seen his evil ways, and he's going to stop pushing the Negro back and beating him. The racial deal is over. We're all one one people together, and we're all American. But when it comes to time of war, we all, as you did the line where he's back in there, back at home. Brother Ed is, like
yes,
I said before, Brother Ed, the future so bright for the followers of Elijah Muhammad? We got to wear shades, brother.
I'm praise due to Allah. Walaikum salam, my brother. Good. Before we go off there, let me bring in my good brother. My good brother. Brother Gerald, I got to say unto you, assalamu alaikum, my brother.
Walaikum salam, sir. Yes, sir. Can
yes,
you hear
sir.
Me, brother?
Yes, sir, I hear you very well.
Yes, sir, brother. As you say, brother, and I follow you up on that, it's a beautiful time to be a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, brother. You know, it's a beautiful thing, brother, to be able to see the inside of what the messenger taught. And, you know, for your listeners and all those ones that, you know, want the truth, you know, you tune in to the Star Crescent Report in spite of all of the, you know, obstacles that you have to go through. And dealing with Brick, getting this truth out there, brother, you still continue to stay on your post. And, you know, we appreciate and love you for doing that. And, you know, you have to have a tremendous amount of love, you know, not just for the messenger, but also for your people to be able to deal with the, you know, with the ignominy and all of the setbacks that you have to with Blog Talk Radio. But, you know, Allah is God, Brother Masrad Muhammad, and he has control over our enemies. After all these years, brother, you still continue to be on the air. Brother, Allah is in control.
Yes, sir.
And a couple other things, brother, real quick. I know your time is limited, but I wanted to say that here too also, brother, in spite of all the rhetoric and war rhetoric, hell, and Donald Trump and all them talk about China, it's very interesting, brother, that the irony, according to Soren Skou, the Danish conglomerate chief executive for Copenhagen, says the United States has started importing even more from China. They even import more, but they won't tell you that, brother, in the mainstream media.
Yeah. Hey, and not only that, but hey, listen, on top of that, just to show you how bad Allah has broken America down, not only is she catching and has to import more from China, right, and borrowing more from China, it's
yes,
also
sir.
A report out that America, as she's sanctioning Russia, she is importing boatloads of Russian liquefied natural gas.
Yes, sir. That's right, brother. And not to change subject, but I wanted to your listeners to listen to this. You spoke about the veterans earlier in the show and how the veterans retreat are being treated in the fall of America, how the messenger teaches on the military, those ones abroad. When they come back here, there will be no jobs. I'm going to give you some numbers just how bad it is on the recruiting here in America. There are stats and statistics that show that the Army and their recruiting, brother, fell thousands of troops short of its recruiting goal this year. The first time it has done so since the height of the Iraq War 13 years ago. Listen to this. $200 million on its already massive recruiting budget, and this fall, the falls weren't just contained to just active duty recruits who fell about 6,500 short of the 75,000 to 80,000 goal that the Army was aiming for. In fact, the Army National Guard is about 8,000 under its 343,000 recruit total, while the Army Reserve is down 9,000 from its almost 200,000 new recruit goal. When asked why the Army was failing to fill its ranks despite offering up to $40,000 in bonuses to year enlistments and student loan repayments, First Class Sergeant Michael T. Peppers, commander of a recruiting station in Urbandale, Iowa, told the New York Times simply, "We're competing with other businesses offering the same thing." Beth Ash, senior economist, Rand Corporation, says, "You have fewer people who can serve. They have more opportunities in the job market. That makes it very hard on the Army." Now, according to even the job stats, brother, you know, the decline of American jobs are going down. So, in other words, people just not joining up with their military. They're becoming very wise to all of the setbacks of the military that are being shipped abroad, and these people are coming back, you know, they're coming back in body bags. And when that South China Sea war jumps off and then the one in Europe, it's going to get worse and worse. And lastly, brother, for your followers, there's an article on Asia Times. It's called U.S. Drops the Gauntlet on the South China Sea. Very good article, and it gives you all of the intricates of what is going on over there, and it goes